Blog Talk Radio.
But baby, don't you understand? Can you be sure that that is
giving it to you straight out the box right there on Solar Records Radio. This is Wardell Potts Jr., and I want to welcome you guys to the show. Thank you so much. It is Friday where we celebrate the sound of Los Angeles Records every Friday here on Solar Records Radio. And because we're talking about Solar, who else are we going to bring on besides my brother, Kevin Dion Spencer? What's up, KB?
Hey, what's up? I see what's going on, boy. I can hear it.
Yeah,
and
you hear it.
Straight out the box. Somebody inside the screen, somebody took the ribbon off, and here we go, baby.
Here we go. Absolutely. You know, and, you know, the ironic thing is that, Kevin, last week when we talked about, you know, in regards to Solar and just the music and stuff that was created there, we started off with talk about And the Beat Goes On. And ironically enough, this is the same song we did this. I mean, this is another song we did the same night in Norman Whitfield's studio. And so and I have to say, Kevin, when we recorded this song, Out the Box for the Whispers, it was interesting because, first of all, we weren't recording the song for the Whispers when we recorded. Even And the Beat Goes On wasn't for the Whispers yet. It was just a song that I think Myers, Phil Parton Woods was doing. And so
That's what I heard too.
And so we're in the studio recording. But I tell you, when we got to Out the Box, I was a little more comfortable after what we had went through with And the Beat Goes On. And that this was the second song that I ever recorded professionally in the studio. And so I have a lot of love for this song.
Okay.
And Kevin, and I love it. Yeah, and I... Because it's our history, right? And it takes me back to when everything was so innocent when we... And then not that... I mean, what I mean by innocent is that we were so young, you know? And for me...
I know what you mean.
Right, and I had just gotten to California, you know? And so I was... Everything was new for me and just hanging out there with you guys and getting, you know, getting familiar. We were... Our relationship was young. It was very young. And just, you know, everybody coming in the studio all together and just hoping for the best, you know, and working really hard, hoping for the best. And man, oh, man, how blessed we were to end up that song right there was on the back of a platinum single. So it's amazing. Amazing.
Yeah,
was there any,
I agree. We were young. I think you can hear the excitement of young energy. You know, we were energetic. Everybody was feeling good. You know, we had the energy. We were eager.
And
you can detect that the way that we're going at these songs, you know. We're going at them wholeheartedly. And like when somebody jumps into a situation head first, we're going head first into those groups.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. What is it, Kevin, can you think of a moment in that sticks out to you? And I know there's a lot of them, but just one of those moments when we were just beginning and, you know, William Shelby, rest in peace, Richard Randolph, your friends. These are, you know, Kevin knew Richard, they were children together. Like he knew Ricky Smith as children, as a child. And so did you ever feel a moment of like, wow, I've pulled my friends into something that's really a blessing to,
certainly,
you know, not just to them, but to their families as well.
Certainly did. I know one thing was that when we started up, you know, Ricky Smith and Richard Randolph and myself, I had that white band that we used to haul the equipment with, and sometimes we just parked at the corner down there at Budvang by Richard's mom's house. And we'd sit in the van and just talk about the day when we, you know, we'd be making records and then I remember Richard and Ricky, they were referring to it as, man, can't wait till we get over. And what I thought about was, I said, wow, we had no idea that once you start doing records and you're out there, you know, you're preparing yourself to go on the road and play live, that's when you're actually paying dues. Paying dues isn't when you played in clubs and you know, your first taste of playing for live audiences. That's not paying dues. What you're doing then is you're learning how to prepare yourself to do your craft. Once you're doing your craft and you start recording, now that's when you're paying dues, actually.
Yeah. Yes, we, and you know, I just got a phone call to play with the Miracles. You know, our across the street brother is the lead singer. Remember, Sydney used to live across the street.
Sydney, did he call me?
He called me. I just got the phone with him, and so he's You know, he is the lead singer of the Miracles. And
Yes.
And so, you know, by the way, he told me to tell you hello. And he's been on the show a couple of times. And
see,
so
that was my neighbor. He lived a stone's throw away across the street.
Oh, literally, right there. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I could throw a rock and hit his window easily.
With your eyes closed. So
that part too.
Yeah, you're amazing. Right,
turn me in the right direction, because there was another house just in front of us. I wouldn't want to hit the wrong one if I'm trying to wake him up. Throw a pebble. Okay.
All right. Well,
not
listen.
A rock.
I'm gonna play a Dynasty song, and then I wanna talk to you about it when we come back. You know, because we're really. With Kevin, I want to, you know, I can go down this road with him. Well, you know, I can hardly do this with anybody else, but I'm going down this road with him. When I first started working and I came out there to California, and Solar was just growing and coming together. And then Kevin was right there in the beginning of it. So I'm just going to play half of this, and then because it's a long, you know, back in the day, songs used to be really long. And it used to be really long.
They did that way, and then they would end up editing them, because songs for radio, say like KGLH was a station, KKA's, anyway, those stations liked for the songs to be 4 minutes and maybe a few seconds over there.
Yeah, 4:10 was the length of a single. Yeah, and so that's what you know. Every time we went into the mastering lab, you know, for the single, they would have
Wally
to.
Wally.
Yeah, which was Wally was awesome. He was amazing, actually.
Yeah, and he had been doing this for so long. Look,
I know.
When we were little kids, I used to look on the record. And I'd see where he took something and wrote and signed his name on the vinyl on the inside where the record's ending. And you would see mastered by, and then he would, Wally Trogger. He signed every record that he mastered, he signed it himself.
Yes.
Right on the vinyl.
Right.
Okay.
And so, let me play a little bit of this, and then when we come back, we're gonna talk about it a little bit. But this is our group, Dynasty, and Kevin and them were doing this stuff before I even got there. So check it out on Solar Records Radio.
Thank you.
Kev, so when you hear that, what are the first thoughts that come to your mind?
Mostly standing in front of the mic in Leon, this was like probably the first song that I led, the whole song. And so and he was just getting to even see what I could or could not do vocally.
Right.
And so was I, because I wasn't, I wasn't,
yeah.
I never planned on being a lead singer. I thought I'd be just fine playing the keyboards back there next to Bob, where you ended up being set up in the center, in the back. And Ricky Smith and I had a keyboard corner, and we were very comfortable playing in that keyboard corner, because I had a great deal of confidence in Rick, and I knew I had, and he knew that I knew what I was doing. And so
right.
I just
right.
remembered that I was standing in Studio Masters in front of the microphone, and that Leon kept going. He was punching me and telling me what to sing for each. He spoon-fed me every single line of that song.
Wow.
Whatever it was. It was, he said, now do this. And then he said, sing it like this. Whatever he was doing. He said, sing this and put the glove in it. Let's rock tonight, baby. He told me everything to do. And,
wow.
I was just sitting there trying to emulate what he was doing. And I was wondering how long I would have to stand there and keep doing that, because, if you don't get something the first time, you're going to go back and let's pick that up again. Let's do that one again. Oh, here's
yes.
Ricky Smith trying to come in. Should I switch over to him? I see Ricky Smith. Can I or should
yes,
I?
Yes, yes. Yeah, go ahead. Sure. Ricky
Hold
Smith
on.
Is Ricky Smith is calling in on the line right now. That's really interesting. Kevin's trying to figure out how to work his phone. He keeps getting new phones.
Oh, he might have to call back. I tried to switch him over. Maybe he's listening to the show. I don't know.
Yeah, well, he's at the very least, he's checking in on you. So,
yeah,
I'll try to contact him. But anyway. So you were having this it was for you like Anna B Goes On was for me, your first time leaving okay. All
because
right.
The difference would be for us was my first time recording a record was Take That to the Bank, and
right.
So I got broke in on Take That to the Bank, and Take That to the Bank definitely was all about what I did, because it was just Leon and myself and the drum rhythm king, drum machine,
right?
That we made that in the living room over there on 84th Place in Dickens.
Right, yeah.
So everything Leon's total focus was on getting my part right, because he was going to add stuff all around it, although we didn't know what all he would end up doing. But my part definitely had structure of the song, and we wrote it in that same room where you used to stay.
Right, yeah.
And that's when I found out I would no longer be playing the bass, because when I was with the Silvers, I played bass guitar for them for about a year. It was about a good solid year. And we toured with Tom Jones. We opened up with Tom Jones, the Silvers did. And, we did a 31-city tour. That was my break. And then before we did that tour, the Silvers went to Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas, Nevada, and we were opening up for Tom Jones in Caesar's Palace. And so a lot of interesting things were going on. That's how I got broke in. And then once we came, that tour ended, Leon said to me, he said, I want you to be, and we're going to be songwriting partners. And I was like, okay, well, I mean, I had written songs with like Ricky Smith and Richard Randolph, you know, we went to the pro level. And it would just be, you know, we'd be there with the, we had a reel-to-reel tape recorder, and we'd be just jamming and recording it to see how we sounded. So now, Leon, he's going to make a record. He said he was a producer. Well, Dell, I did not know what a producer was, other than, you know, I had seen produced by whoever, you know.
Right.
On the album cover. But What does a producer do? A producer is responsible for every single thing that you hear in a record, and responsible for getting on there clean. Everything's audible. There's no distortion. Making sure that the instrument is in its proper place in exactly the same, you know, consistency.
Right.
And everything that goes on here, from the instruments, the drums, the other rhythm instruments, and the vocals, he's responsible. He fine-tooth combs everything that you hear. A producer is like
a director
in a movie, for a movie set.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nothing goes on there that, you know, he's responsible if it doesn't turn out right. The producer messed up.
Right. So let me just ask you this, Kevin, because you when you first met the Silvers, right? Were you? I'm just trying to tap into your manhood. When you first met the Silvers and you saw all these beautiful girls, were you like, oh my goodness?
I had seen them in magazines and, you know, on television. So all
but then now you see them face to face.
Yeah, and all you're doing is just saying, oh, there's Pat, you know, in real life. Oh, there's Angie in real life. You just identify people. Because the first person that I could remember, the first person I ever met in the Silvers, I can tell you this, happened to be Leon Silvers. And who met him at the same time I did? Ricky Smith. Smith and another gentleman named Paul Mabry. Paul Mabry was drummer Wardell. And what it was Leon came to a little rehearsal spot we had that was on 54th Street and 11th Avenue. It was like a rehearsal slash, it would be a recording studio if it had more equipment. But that's where we rehearsed all the time. And then the proprietor of the rehearsal studio said, oh, Leon Silvers is coming over here to audition Paul Mabry. So Ricky and I were sitting there. We had a Hammond B3 up in there, and he had his drum set up. And so we're sitting there waiting for Leon Silvers to come audition Paul Mabry. And then Leon pulled up in his Volvo. He had a gold Volvo back then. I remember the car he was driving. And so we saw him park across the street, and he got out and walked, and I said, wow, there's Leon Silvers. And he was Ricky and I. Little did we know, the three of us, that we would end up working together, and Ricky and I would be two of his favorite keyboard players, because I heard him talking to some people recently within the last year or so, and he told them, he said, well, Ricky Smith and Kevin Spencer were my best two keyboard players. So he was telling those people how glad he was to have us, and we were glad to be here, of course. And then he built everything else. You know, he handpicked it. You, because you had to audition by yourself. We didn't even know you. I didn't even know you had to go through
from the city of brotherly love.
Nobody was there but you and him. And I don't know what that was like, but you might happen to fill us in But how did you get picked to be the drummer and he had you by himself?
Well, you know,
how did
first
he know
all,
you were the one?
He Tony Westcott told him. And so Tony Westcott, just so you guys know, he was the drummer for the Silvers. And so he played with Kevin and Ricky and all those guys with the Silvers.
Because Ricky played, and you're right about that.
Right.
Ricky played for the Silvers as well, because I brought him in.
Right. And so when the tour was over with the Silvers, Tony Westcott came back home to Philadelphia. And Tony Westcott lived behind my dad's gas station. So that's how I got he lived right behind my dad's gas station, right across the street from the park.
That was a bad day. Tony Westcott was off good to me.
I learned so much from Tony Westcott. Oh, yeah. He was a full of information, a little powerhouse. And he was
reading drum charts, Wardell. I'm saying, he was showing me how it goes. He was showing me which marking was for the snare, what was for the hi-hat, when was tom-toms was supposed to be hit. And he'd be practicing in the hotel room. And he was into doing odd meters, like you say, Kev, this is called a seven-eight meter.
Yeah,
he loved to do those.
We grew up playing all kind of different meters and progressive jazz stuff. Because
was a
jazz
Philadelphia
drummer.
Thing. Yeah. Is that what was up with that?
Yeah, that. Well, it probably was in other places, but I was only in Philadelphia as a kid, so I have no idea.
Well, I had never done it before, Los Angeles, nobody ever came up and said, "Hey, Kev, do this." And then one time he did 11-8, he said 1-2-3-4-5-6-7-8-9-10-11, 1-2-3-4-5-6. He was doing an 11-8, and he said, "Now we're going to play over." And man, I'm just saying, Westcott, now this is the thing that I do remember, is that Westcott, he always, like whenever the Silvers was down, and we weren't performing, he always flew back to Philly, so he would be in Philly. We never saw Westcott until it was time for us to do a gig. You know, he didn't stay in LA and kick it with his wife. We only saw him when it was time to take the stage.
I thought I was going to do. I thought I was going to do the same
but
thing.
I just thought about it because I didn't get to hang out with him the way that, you know, I'm sure you did because where he lived was behind your father's gas station. You got a chance to really know him.
Oh, yeah. I grew up with him. And he was older than me, so he was like a little big brother. You know, Tony was short. Woo, short. But like Prince. Tony was like Prince size. The whole thing, you know, just small and powerful.
And you're just an inch or two taller. I'd like to add that.
whatever. Hold on, wait. All right, so listen, I want to keep moving here. I got to get, but anyway, okay, I just want to answer. The reason that I ended up auditioning with Leon by myself is because you guys, everybody else was already there. So Tony had me come out there to audition. He told Leon that I would be the one. So I got on a Greyhound bus and it took me 3 days.
Oh,
I was a nervous wreck getting out there. And I got there, and then it took about 3 weeks before I even auditioned. I'm like, what's going on?
And who came to get you? You rode the bus. Who came and got you from the bus station?
Leon, and late as always.
And
I was
you never met him. He was
never
late.
Never met him. All of a sudden, it's just a big old afro. And then as we're driving back, Ricky Silvers and Jonathan, I think, or Edmund, I don't know, one of them, they were in the car.
He drove by himself to get you?
No, he had his brothers with him. So I'm sitting in the car.
Oh, so you met them too?
Yeah, on that day when he came to me. So, but they were nothing but afros because when we got in the car and we started driving back to his house, all I saw was these, you know, of course, Leon's going to play music in the car, right? Playing the songs
and they
that
all
he's work, working
that
on.
Head rock.
And they
big,
all
big,
bobbing
big,
their heads. And I'm this kid wondering what the heck is going on here. And so, but, you know, I really enjoyed it was because it was for me, I went from, you know, being in the city of Philadelphia and, you know, in college and doing music and wanting to do this professionally to ended up, you know, getting to California and getting in the car with a very successful group already that
yeah.
I see on TV all the time.
Oh, you
and
were
so
nervous,
the,
boy. You didn't almost wet yourself.
Yeah. And so that's how, and so then Leon was eventually I was like, am I going to audition? He said, oh, yeah, come on. And so we're gonna go to my mom's house. So then I got a chance to go to see, to meet Mom Silvers and in this beautiful house
boy.
In Palos Verdes. And it was just like, I was so taken away. And so we went in the garage. We had the drums set up and I went in.
Right.
And he asked me to play a couple things. Asked me to play a couple more things. And next thing
you
know,
you only had to play a few things. He didn't drill you.
No, it was no drilling to drill. He just told me what he wanted me to play. I played it. And then he asked me to play this and play along with him. And we were playing. And he told me to do this. And I did that. And he said, okay, that's cool. We're done. And I was like, what? Okay.
Yeah.
And so then, but he didn't say. He didn't say that you made the audition or not. So we just.
He didn't do that to me either, Wardell.
He didn't
do that to me either.
He didn't even say.
He didn't say that to me.
In his own mind, he already knows, and he just keeps it to himself for some. And I remember
that's what
he does. Mom Spencer said, "He didn't tell you, baby." I said, "No, Mom." She said, "Well, call him and ask him." I said, "Yes, ma'am." So I called him. That's Kevin's mom, and so I called him and I was like. Leon, hey, I don't know if I made the group or not, but I you know, if I made the group, I'm going to go to Philadelphia, and when you guys get ready, I'll come back. He's like, oh what? Of course you made the audition.
Talking about you.
He said, of course you made the audition. I said, really? I said, okay, cool, thank you. And he said, but don't, you can't leave. You can't go anywhere. You got to stay here because we're going to go in the studio
course.
And record The Whispers and Shalimar. So yeah, but anyway, hi Mom. I know you're in the background there. I love you, Mom.
Yeah, she's taking her nap now. I came in here to do the interview so she can hear your voice.
Okay, cool. That's cool. All right, so listen, Kev, I wanna move on. I'm gonna play another song, Kevin. This here was this is the first song that I got to record with Dynasty. I mean, with playing everything and not waiting until it's already recorded, and then I did overdub.
Yep.
This is like my first Dynasty session. My first recording session was with the Whispers, but my first Dynasty session was this song. And something about this song, Kev, it gets a lot of people love this song. And I want to hear
what it is.
Yeah, and we didn't do it live. That's the strangest thing. But here we go. We'll be right back.
I want to hear this.
We'll be right back with Kevin Spencer from Dynasty and Wardell Potts Jr. We'll be right back. Check it out, Kev. Why didn't you
now,
do that?
Now, after you started playing it, I said, I'm not surprised. You know, Wardell, that's how we opened our show.
We did?
That was the first song.
Oh, I can't remember.
That's when we come out the, yep, we come out the dressing room, and the stage would be dark, and we go up them side steps onto the stage platform. You take your place on the drums, and that's the one where the first song where Nidra, where Linda, I should say, was on my left. Nidra was on my right, and I'd be in the middle, and we were doing that slow turn, and then we get to one where we throw our head back, and we had I had longer hair. So I would put my head back, and my hair would flip back, and then we turn back the other way, all the way like a half a circle, and then I throw my head back again, and yeah, that's how we opened up. All the time we were playing with.
Yes.
Yeah,
we did that.
We opened up like that in Africa, we came out. And when we played in Nigeria, that was our first song. That was always our first song, usually, for a good while. I don't remember what we did after that, but that's how we started.
Yes, I remember
we did a lot of songs. We did cover songs, and we did the cover songs. The band was so tight until I remember we played cover songs. We did a Heartbreak Hotel that the Jacksons did, and we were playing that just like the record.
Oh yeah, that
we
was
did
crazy.
Yeah, that was tight, and we did I Wanna Be Your Lover by Prince, and people thought that we were the group.
I know.
We sounded, when people were saying, was that y'all song? I said, no, that's Prince. And I guess he saw Leon. He had a big fro like Prince did back then. And you know, he was light-skinned. So I guess they were assuming that might have been our song. And he was singing a lot of the high parts. Leon could sing higher than both of the girls, let it be known.
Yes. Because Leon was singing some of the high parts on that song. And then he got the big afro like Prince, light-skinned like Prince. So I could see how people were... confused, but also Prince came to our show. Him and
I
Morris
didn't know
Day.
When he came, because you know he came and he eased in though. But I met him. I met him before, and he's just real polite, you know.
And
kind of quiet, a little shy, a little bit. I guess unless you're chopping it up. In a conversation with him, that's when you find out that he's highly opinionated.
Yeah. Now let me ask you this question that I get asked a lot when I do radio interviews, and that is, did we as in Dynasty do any songs for any of the other artists that you wished that we kept for Dynasty? I think the question
asking
is
me
that
I'm gonna tell you every last one of them. And I'm gonna tell you why, because the ones that became big hits on other artists, I always imagine that. Just imagine if Dynasty had done, because we could have performed every song that you know. I mean, we could have performed any of the songs that we did quite well. On the other groups, Shalimar, even the Whispers, because Scotty always told me, he said, "Boy, you almost sound like me." You know, he said I had a tone that was in the range and in the just in that area, and because they always said I sounded older than I was. Well, I was 23, 24 years old, and they always made a comment about. He sounds older than he is. And I'm going, how do you sound like an old man? I'm 23, maybe going through. And so I didn't take it as a compliment. I said, they said I sound old. But listening to it now, I sounded mature. That's what they used the word old.
Yeah.
But it was that I had a mature sound. But, yeah, for me, Wadi, that would be the answer. I always thought about it. If we had done Second Time Around, if we had done, you know, we could have did Emergency. We could have did any of the songs that we wrote that went gold. But, I mean, I now, as far as the voices, since we had girls, I'm not sure how Leon would have broke down something like And the Beat Goes On. But we could have sang that. And we could have, and of course we could have, we laid the track, you and I and the other gentleman. So,
well, you know,
we were present.
Yeah.
We could have done that live. And guess what I remember? Will be doing our warm-up for the Galaxy of Stars tour,
mm-hmm.
we were going on stage, and sometimes man would just say, he called out, "Make that move one time." You know, we were just standing around, and they were doing something, adjusting the monitors or whatever. And so he started playing "Make That Move," and we all broke into it. We'd be on stage doing a sound check, and so they could keep checking the instruments, because they did it in phase. I remember that they spent the most time, in my opinion, setting the mics, moving the mics, making sure they were the right distance, making sure the kick drum was mic'd properly. Then put the snare mic where it was underneath your snare, getting the sound coming from under the bottom. Adjusting your cymbal mics that they had up there, to me, the most of doing sound checks, I noticed they were very meticulous about how your microphones for each section of your drums was set up, and they took their time and kept checking it again and checking it again. Do the kick, boom, 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 boom. Hit the hi-hat, hit the snare, bam, bam, bam. Now do your tom-tom rolls, I know you remember because you had to do it.
Yeah. But I was used to that because in the studio, same thing. It's always about making sure.
The drums have to be.
Yeah, exactly.
They have to be my property.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I want to play another song. Kevin, you mentioned it, I do want to play it. But, Kevin, is there like any other times that you, you miss about Solar? Like for me, I'll give you an example of what I'm asking. Like for me, I actually miss going to the building. I actually miss I miss going to the building, and then I miss going to the Musicians Union, because we would see a whole bunch of musicians. Yeah, but the check part was good, but we also met other musicians. All the top musicians that were recording in L.A. was there.
Oh, sometimes you run into somebody if you knew what they looked like. Like,
right.
I didn't know what somebody like Wawa Watson looks like, but he was,
right.
I'm sure he was in there standing in line.
Oh, yeah.
Waiting to get his check, too, because, you go in and you give them your name and your ID. And your Musicians Union card, and then they went to a file and would go through, look through it, and then pull out your check.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of people that we had heard of, and that's where we all went to get our checks was from Musicians Local 47 is what they called it in Los Angeles.
Yes.
Local 47.
And also, but this is the thing, I know we had our own Solar building, but it was something really special about the Solar building that was in the Motown building, because the Solar office that was in the Motown building, because it was Motown and Solar in the same building. Mm-hmm. And,
but Motown
just a couple
was
floors
higher
apart.
Up.
Yeah, Motown was, they were like,
Motown was
11th floor. We were on the 9th floor, and they were on 11th or the 12th.
Yeah, because
so they had two floors.
Yeah, okay, now that's so I knew how small Solar was in the beginning. And I would see somebody like I remember one time I saw Bobby DeBarge on the elevator, and I said, oh, wow, there's one of the DeBarges. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes you run, you will run into an artist that was on Motel.
I saw Marvin Gaye.
I'm sure there were other ones that we ran into.
A lot of people. Yes, Marvin Gaye in the elevator. I mean, it's a lot.
I only met him one time, Woody. I met him one time.
Yes. I met a lot. Oh, yeah.
And he had on shades, and his shades were so dark, Wardell, when I met him, it was at a, do you know that Don King gave some kind of event, and he gave like a party, and he had, they were slicing the pig. They had chefs that were cutting off, they had the whole body of the pig, roasted pig. Head and everything, and they were slicing off select pieces. You know, you walk up and say what you wanted, and they were doing it. And they had crabs stacked up, man. They had everything you could imagine on ice. You know, crab, cracked crab, and all that. But anyway, and Don King has his fighters there. That day he had Michael Dokes, and he was walking around, Don King's walking around that crazy hairstyle. And but Dick had us to go there. So obviously Dick and Don King were associates. You know, he knew Don King pretty well, I would say. So we were there, and Don King was making it known that solo artists were there. And there was actors there too, and so I'm saying, I saw. Look, there's Marvin Gaye. And I said, I'm gonna, you know, that was my hobby, Wardell. Whenever we would see a big star, I said, I'm gonna go shake his hand, you know, I got in trouble like that a couple of times. The first time I saw Michael Jackson backstage at an awards ceremony, I thought it was a Michael Jackson impersonator because back then, everybody had to do on the red outfits and put that glove on, and there was Michael Jackson impersonators up the yin yang. So I'm standing with Leon Silvers, and I said, "Hey, Leon," he said, "Yeah," I said, "Man, I've seen a lot of Michael Jackson impersonators, but look, this dude over here got him down pat. He looked just like Michael Jackson." And then Leon leaned over my ear and said, "Oh, damn, that is Mike." That's what I hear. I never met him before. So I said, I'm fixing to go shake his hand. And then Leon went, "Oh, you are? Oh, yeah?" And so I went over there to shake his hand, and he saw me coming to him. So Michael Jackson faces me, sticks his hand out, and I'm shaking hands with Mike. Okay. I think I shook the one that he didn't. He must have wore the glove on the left hand, because I shook it with my right hand. I never shake hands with my left hand unless somebody else starts it. You know what I'm saying? But I always extend my right hand. So I think I was touching skin, in other words. So we're shaking hands. And behind Michael Jackson, Wardell, there are these NFL-looking football player types, but they're bodyguards. And so they looked around and saw me shaking hands with Michael Jackson. But listen, Wardell, Michael Jackson was holding on to my hand while we were shaking. So, you know, what would have been a brief handshake, you know, like we were doing passing, he was still holding my hand. He said, yeah, I like you guys' music. And I was going, oh, he's heard us? He heard Dynasty? Yes, he had. And he said he liked the music. And then he goes, where's Leon? And I'm turning around to, you know, my head to point back at where Leon is, where I had walked away from him to go over to Michael. And I said, he's right there. And then he waves at Leon. He says, Leon. And he says, highly on, and then when he turned, I turned back around to face him, I see these big bodyguard guys coming, and they're coming to grab me, to take me down, you know, and wipe the floor with me, I guess, protecting Michael. And Michael stopped me and said, no, 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 he's a friend, he's a friend. And so that's how Michael Jackson stopped me from getting beat up for it.
Oh, Jesus.
And then Leon said, he said, Leon looked at me, and I said, wow. He said, kid, you can't be going up to the stars when they get big like Michael Jackson. You can't just be walking up to him, man. My man, I said, okay. He said, then he leaves me and said, I bet you won't do that again, would you?
Yeah.
I did do it one of the time with Babyface, but that's because we saw Babyface so all the time, and there was no thing, you know what?
Yeah.
You know, you could walk up to Babyface in L.A.
Or yeah,
the
I
GOP.
Did. Well, I did.
So,
I was with him at the award ceremony. So
right, but you better not do it in public because Babyface had to stop his bodyguard from jacking me up too. I ran up behind him. I squared through the bodyguard's wood, and so I grabbed Babyface from the back, and I had my whole arm around his neck.
Okay,
don't be talking about what should happen to me. Nothing should happen. But yeah, listen, they were slack on their job. You're not supposed to go up and grab no entertainer from around his throat and be right there. I was holding him. And look, that's some Kevin Spencer stuff right there. Look,
I used to
get myself in some situations.
Yes,
and not
did.
Meaning any harm, but breaching security.
All right. Well, tell us about this song right here.
Oh, man, do you know this? I heard about this song the very next morning after you, Ricky, let's see, I think it was Pepper. You guys were saying, man, Kev, you should have been here last night. You said, we really need a track. And you guys were saying how bad it was.
Yeah, this song stands. I mean, it's still one of my favorites.
You laying the drums out, boy. All that
on
both that and Turn Me Out is the other one where I can hear you real good.
All right, we'll be right back.
I'm
I could make it. Oh my goodness gracious, Kevin!
Lord, yeah, I'm right here.
Mercy. That
was a good jam, man. And that was Steve Shockley on the top.
That's just amazing, man. That song, I love that song so much, and it's just wonderful, man. And I miss my brothers and jamming with you guys in the studio, and I just pray that we get to do it again one day, again soon, man, to get in the studio and something.
Yeah,
else. And
we'll probably have to set that up for ourselves, boy. We'll just have to, you know. I mean, we can show up somewhere. And if we're there, I bet you they would let us take the drums, let us take the keyboards. If they knew the Throwdown Brothers were there, let us do whatever we were going to do. One song, if you're able, one song. That would be a historical event.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. And, man, so I want to just say to you, thank you again for coming on. Back-to-back weeks and hanging out with us and just sharing some of your thoughts. Is there anything else that you may want to share about your, you know, anything about Solar that you know, brothers, you know, the musicians or your brothers or, you know, just the group or just being part of
the
band?
That's what we've been talking about all this time with you, Ricky, Leon, you know what I'm saying? Pepper, bless his heart. Steve Shackley, William Shelby, bless his heart. I'm saying we all had, we were family. And we had something that, whether we realized how important it was going to be, what an effect it was going to have on people, we were just enjoying ourselves, trying to do the best job that we could do with each of our partners. And it's lasted over 40 years, buddy.
Yes. Amen.
I don't know anybody else's music that you give homage to and gets played and still gets played on the mainstream radio stations as well as the stuff that we did together.
Wow.
I mean, and sometimes it gets played as if it was almost a new cut.
Yes, yeah. It's a, you know, because for the kids, it is new. And they love that group. They love the way it sounded, the way it felt. And, you know, and like when I listen to the Motown stuff, I still get those feelings of like, whoa, man, when I was a kid, this music was so good. And it still is so good. And that's what I love about the Solar sound, because it continues to be good. It didn't like, it wasn't like a fad. I mean, it was so much invested in making sure that the songs were good quality songs. And I have to take my hats off to, you know, Leon Silvers for just overseeing that whole thing over at Solar and making sure we came out of the box right. And that really helped God in the light of us. What's that?
That was a huge responsibility.
Yeah.
I would not have wanted to be in his shoes without that responsibility. And he's building on a record company that had yet to prove itself until we did it. I'm going to say the first thing that made RCA take Solo Records serious was when they did Take That to the Bank, because before that, Solo hadn't charted in the top five.
Right.
You know, and so that set up the gateway for, and the beat goes on, because RCA felt that they had lost a Shalamar's record, Take That to the Bank, should have been a gold disc. In any other situation, they would have been able to get a gold disc out, and they didn't. It became what you call a radio hit. They played it all the time across the country on the radio, but it wasn't coming out of the record stores.
Because
they could hear it anytime they got ready. And so when we dropped and the beat goes on, Arche was making up for what they felt they had, you know, that there was a lack of from the Shalamante. And then, too, at the same time, Second Time Around came out right around the same time as and the Beagle song. So they really bucked up both of those songs, and those said, "There goes your gold and your platinum," right together.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Yeah, so that's what I believe happened. I mean, you know, when you look at it,
we were a part of
the getting the respect from RCA for them to do what they had committed themselves to do, and the first time they didn't quite do it, so the next time they put extras on.
Do you still talk to Ray Harris?
I have his number. I talk to him occasionally. Yep.
Okay.
I have spoken with Ray.
I would like to get him on.
But I haven't called him this year. But that's a good suggestion, right?
Yeah, let's get him on.
Yes, that'd be great. That's a good idea, Wayne.
Yes, sir. Let's get
I have a number
talking.
If you need it.
Okay, yeah, you just text it to me. I'd like to get in touch with him and stuff.
He knows a lot more than me. He was there. He was in the trenches.
Absolutely. And so I want to also just remember the beautiful lady that worked at Solar that passed away in a car. She left the party early. Margaret Nash. What a sweetheart.
She did the publishing at Solar. She was there. And Glenn Davis.
Yes. And I still, you know, I post her pictures and stuff. So just because she was a part of our family, and
yes, she was definitely.
Yeah, I just it's so sad that
blew me away, Warrior.
Yes, that was very difficult. Yeah. All right. Well, anyway, thank you. Love you much, man.
Love you too, little boy. You know that all the time. We love you. My family loves you.
Yes, sir. And so
brother I never had. That's what somebody told me. Said, "Oh, what the hell is the brother you never had since I was raised an only child?" you were, and we sharing the room together. And they said, "Oh, what the hell is the brother you never had?" And so I said, "Yeah, okay."
Yeah,
but for all practical purposes, you were, because no other. Nobody else my age had lived close or even been close to me like that once you moved in.
All right.
You were definitely a curious young man, because every morning it seemed like, what did you say? Kev, do you think that we're going to get to go on tour? Because that was a big thing. We hear about the tour, but we hadn't started rehearsing until like maybe around October. We started rehearsing somewhere around the end of September or the beginning of October, and we rehearsed from October to December, because they had that drive for the Catholic school girls, and the school that won got a concert by Dynasty, Shalimar, and Lakeside. And was our first time playing live. Okay.
Cool beans.
I'm done.
Well, all right. Well, thank you for your memory, brother. And thank you for your hits and the songs that you wrote for us. And so I'm going to give you...
Oh, not that one.
All right. Here you go. Thanks, Kevin. We love you, brother. All right, man. All right.
Bye, everybody. It's been a pleasure.
Wow, what a beautiful, beautiful song. Had my boy Kevin Spencer singing on that one. KB, tell us about that, man. That was a Babyface, L.A. and Babyface production, right? And Leon Lewis.
No, Jimmy Jam and Terry.
Oh, Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis.
Yeah,
wow.
That's them. That's Jimmy Jam on the keyboards and Terry on the bass.
Right, and I don't know how. I'm so dyslexic. I can't believe I said.
It's a duo. It's a duo, probably won't see those anymore. I don't think that we're gonna see any more duos like Jimmy Jam or like L.A. and Babyface. You know, the way that records are being made now, it seems to me like the great teams and producers like that, now everybody's out to do everything themselves. And so now you got people producing and they do it by themselves. But I haven't seen any teams other than, like I'll see where Dr. Dre does something with Eminem. Well, they team up, you know what I'm saying? But most of the guys now, everybody's for themselves.
Right. And so you enjoyed Pull My String by Lakeside, huh?
Oh, man, I hadn't heard that in probably almost 20 or 30 years, man. Didn't just like it. Didn't just enjoy it.
Yeah.
I took that hook, man, and sinker.
You know, we had so much fun. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead, finish your thought.
No. Go ahead. Say what you were saying, because we did.
We had so much fun on stage when we were performing. And like Dynasty, most of the time, every once in a while, we have somebody else to open the show. But Dynasty would open, and we came on.
Yeah.
And we had a great time. And then Lakeside would come on. And for me, it was a teaching moment, because they have been doing it a lot longer than I have. I never, so playing with Dynasty, first of all, was recording for, Solar, and then that was my first, and then, working with you guys, that was my first, and then working with Dynasty was my first, and then, we did our first tour as well, that's my first. It was like, wow, all these firsts. So it was like I was growing up, and hanging out with Lakeside. A group that was already, because Lakeside had a couple of songs out before I even got there.
This is the difference with Lakeside, though, Whitey. Lakeside, they were a neighborhood group, and they all grew up together. I don't know of anybody else over there other than the twins from the Whispers who grew up together.
Mm-hmm.
They were kids together playing.
And
that's the... That's a major difference between Lakeside and everybody else.
Well, when them on stage, though, what I enjoyed, I would go after, we performed, I would go backstage and we would get dressed, with regular clothes instead of our uniform. And then we would come, I would go back out there and I would sit
and watch
there
the show.
And watch and enjoy these guys. I was like, wow, these guys are really good. And I just loved, how... It was taking it to another level, because I didn't even go to R&B concerts. I went to only jazz concerts because I was a jazz drummer. So I didn't know that world.
And you were lucky you got to do that.
I know.
Because I'm going to say, my mother didn't like me going to talent shows. I snuck and stayed after school to see the first talent show that was at the my school. And I saw the kids that I had in class up there singing and doing different things. And I was like, wow. I'm like, I never been to a talent show like that. My favorite shoes. So I didn't see a... Oh, I take it back, Woody. I was about to say I didn't see a live act until later on. I do remember that my godmother took me to see Nat King Cole at the Greek Theater when I was at like 8 or 9 years old.
Lucky you. Thank you, God.
So he was the first person He was the first person I saw. And Natalie was there. She was a little girl, like about 12, 11 or 12 years old. And he brought her out and she sang a song. I mean, that was a momentous occasion.
Beautiful.
And my godmother had these wonderful seats where we were sitting right down, not on the front row, but like a few rows up, like maybe 10 rows up.
Nice.
So that I could really see everybody's face.
That's awesome. Well, we got Don Fleming.
So I had a chance to see Nat King Cole before he passed away when I was like 9 years old.
Excellent, excellent. Don, are you there? Is that Don Fleming?
I'm here. What's going on, man?
There he is, Kevin. I told you Don Fleming was coming in.
Don said, what did Don say? Don said, what's going on? Do you remember what Pops Francis used to say when people say, hey, what's going on? How's everything, Pops? Pops say, he said, what's going on? And Pops say, everything and nothing?
I'm going to use that. I'm going to start using that.
I do. And, used it. Somebody say, hey, man, what's going
what
on? I said, everything and nothing.
Lord have mercy. Don Fleming, how you been, man? How's your day?
I've been good, brother. Just, you know, body's a little tired with aching, but I'm good. I'm here hanging out with you, so I appreciate the opportunity.
Oh, yeah, man. Kevin Spencer, Don Fleming, Wardell Potts on Solar Records Radio. We got about another 25 minutes. Don't forget, tomorrow, Solar Wants to Dance at 2 p.m. Eastern. So tune in for that. We're going to have a good time. Now, listen, I also want you guys to know I'm going to start, you know, we're going to kind of like a summer break. But there's a lot of interviews that I'm going to be playing that, you know, like we just lost Pooji from the Delphonics. I will be playing the interview, our last interview with him before he passed. So you would want to hear that, you know, if you were a fan of the Delphonics. Pooji was the one with the high falsetto, beautiful voice. And then many others we have. So we'll be playing those through out the summer, you know, because everybody's traveling, family, people doing family stuff. And so we were very blessed that we get the opportunity to do that as well. And so thank you guys so much for, you know, being a part of Solar Records Radio. And so, but today we got Kevin Spencer and Don Fleming. What's up, guys? What's up? Don, what's up with what is it about Dynasty, Don Fleming, that draws you to Dynasty?
Besides you, huh? Oh, geez, that's a lot to think about there.
That's a lot to think about.
But go ahead. No, man. I love the blend of just the funk and, of course, that Silver's bass line. It's just amazing. Kevin's voice, you know, just complimenting all this, the cherry on top, man. So,
yeah, I let him borrow my voice, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You let him borrow your voice.
Do you know that I never considered whether my voice was doing anything for people, you know what I'm saying? You can have somebody else singing.
Stop.
And
come on,
you know,
now.
But I'm saying that doesn't mean that people have to be affected by it. They just hear the song, or they sing that real nice, and people go on about their business. But then I would find that there would be people who would say, oh, this or that, didn't make comments of what my voice was to them. But I was listening to guys like Howard Hewitt, and I was going, man, I wish I could hear some of those notes like Howard. And Howard may hit that because I'm a baritone.
Mm-hmm.
So my lower register is where I'm most effective. I don't do a lot of, I don't do high notes and stuff. I can go falsetto, but I don't stay there. But Howard used to get up there and twirl and do all that, you know what I'm saying, just bounce back and forth. And I said, I want to be like that guy.
Yeah.
So everybody wants to be like somebody else. Whatever you do, I guess if you're a drummer, there's a drummer out there that you say, man, I feel good doing what I do, but I sure would like to throw on some of that stuff I heard that one do.
We all have our different, you know, people that we admire and you know, and idol. I like Lenny White was my guy. So I grew up listening to Lenny White, and I listened to a lot of drummers. Mm-hmm. But Lenny White mm-hmm. was the one for me.
And I met him, Wardell.
Oh, okay. Yeah, and he
I hung out with him. He's cool. He's so cool, just like you would like.
Yeah, he's a nice guy. I mean, I met him as well, and he's a real cool guy. Go ahead.
I just want on the outside looking in, and I guess my question to Kevin, I'm sure you probably heard it many times before. It's one of those, if I had a dollar, but I gotta ask, man, did you ever get like in some ways of you when you reach your voice to a certain part of a song, do you ever get those Mark Woods comparisons?
They did that in the beginning. I heard his name before I met Mark. And it was the whispers said that I sounded something like Mark Wood because I was telling Wardell, I said my voice had a mature sound to it. For me being 23 years old, I sounded mm-hmm. like an older man. And I'll say the same for Mark Wood, is that, you know, because, you know, he was like compared to David Ruffin, he's been compared to a lot of...
Yeah.
And he is the only... he is my only friend that I know that has the sound he has. You know, mm-hmm. you always know when you hear Mark. And I think that's important for a singer to be easily identified, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Somebody goes, who is that singing? And mm-hmm. everybody in the room is going, it sounds like so-and-so, or it sounds like it could be this one. Nobody identifies you. That means you still have something that you need to do. And in most cases, I'll say, you have to find yourself, whatever it is that you, if you're a player, if you're a drummer, like, I know Wardell when I hear Wardell playing. I don't care who he's being featured behind or who he's supporting. I'm saying, I know Wardell instantly. I know that snap. I know that foot. I'm saying, you know, when you get when you can be identified with you being you, doing what you do, that's more of like a maturity that you come to, where now I don't think about everybody else that sounds something like you, because you don't sound like anybody else.
Yeah. Wow.
But you can tell who's influenced an individual. You know, you can tell when a singer has been influenced by the, like with Vesta, I knew that she had been influenced by Chaka Khan, but she
mm-hmm.
sounded like
same background.
But she was doing, mm-hmm. But she was doing Chaka Khan licks in her solo project on A&E.
Right.
Wardell's homework. He busted in. I think he was one of the first ones to bust in. He had Regina Bell, and she didn't have anything to do with Solar. And Wardell had everything to do with Solar. And then he wrote the song, too. I said, what, Wardell? I went down there and spent the day with you at A&M. And when you had your office and your keyboard set up, and I was the one that kept walking out onto, that was on La Brea. I walk out onto the break because Wardell's his composition office, I'll call it, was the door opened up and you could walk right out onto La Brea. You thought I forgot that, huh?
that's good, Kevin. You're right. You're right.
I can't forget it. It's the first time that I spent that much time at A&M is up there kicking with Wardell all afternoon, and we were in there just... we were just grooving, really. We were trying to find something to do that we had an outstanding kind of, you know when you have a good groove. When number one, you plan something and you don't get tired of it right away. Like, you know, if you come up with something and you can play it, okay, you listen back to it, then you play it again. And it's just as fresh. Of course, you just wrote it, but... also, you're not getting tired of hearing. That's one of my big, one of the things I look for is when I come up with, I'm a part of something that we come up with, and you can listen to it over and over, and it doesn't have lyrics, it doesn't have anything.
That's, that's one of the things I miss about recording with all you guys, because I get to listen to whatever we recorded or I recorded, but when I record with you guys, I get to listen to not only what I did, but I get to listen to what you guys did. So we all would have like the basic part that we had to play, but we all, Don Fleming, I want you to know, we all just snuck away a little bit and added little things, which gave the seasoning to the song.
You can only imagine.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's your own personal flavor that you bring to the table.
And sometimes
I remember I used to listen to Wardell.
And I would listen back sometimes and go, whoa, what was that? What is that?
And have to listen to it again, Wardy. I'm saying now we're listening to each other again on an individual basis. I'm taking the track apart because now I'm listening to Wardell's foot right there. He went, doo-doo-doo-doo-doo. And double up on that, and while we were recording it, I did notice that we're there because he wasn't in anyone's way, or he didn't throw anything off. And I say, listen, this foot right there, he's going, and he's doing it over and over consistently, do, pop, do, pop, do, do, and he'd be doing it. I said, and he's not breaking a stride. He's not doing slow one time and fast the next. He was doing it the same way every time, like a machine. And I was going, man, how's Wardell playing that like that? I'd look at his caps. I said, look at his caps all rolled up like that. From that kick drum. I'd be looking. And do you remember Mom used to always say, you used to wear shorts a little more than the rest of us, Wardell.
Oh, yeah, I know.
You were the shorts man. As a matter of fact, that he'd be up there. We getting ready to go on stage, and Wardell will be half naked. I'm going to tell you. Yes, I'm telling you. We're going to have a vest. The vest is open, and he's just got a vest on, and then he's got the shorts on. And I'm going, that's in his costume? That's all he's wearing?
Just shorts and a curl.
Leon never said anything. He was cool with it. And so
it was movement.
Yeah.
Because you wanted freedom.
Yes, because for me, doing that is like doing sports. When I'm playing, I feel I'm an athlete on the drums. I'm not sitting there trying to be good looking. I'm trying to be able to put it all in like an athlete.
And Don, have you ever seen Wardell play?
You've seen the video.
Oh no, you gotta see him live. He shows out. This boy, he does too.
I didn't pay him anything.
He shows out. Listen,
that.
I'm gonna tell you a real quick story. One time Wardell was playing at the Palladium, and he was playing behind the Silvers. And so something happened on stage, and the Silvers got frustrated. And the last person that walked off the stage was Foster. And Foster was like, they just had fell into a little slump or funk or whatever it was at a moment, and they felt like they were losing the crowd. And they weren't losing the crowd. The crowd was trying to familiarize themselves with the songs because they did their standards, but then they did some of their new stuff, and so the people weren't ready for it yet. That's what really happened. The people they were playing some songs from their new release on Solar, and people hadn't caught on to that album. And so they got discouraged. I knew what was happening. I was standing in the audience. I was standing up in front of the bandstand, and I was looking at everybody. And so they walked off the stage. People don't know about this, Wardell, you remember. And Wardell couldn't believe his eyes. You could see the look on his face was like, I can't believe they're giving up. And so then Wardell just hit his snare with both sticks. Rap, and got everybody's attention. That got everybody's attention. Whether he meant to do it or not, I think he did. And then all of a sudden, Wardell went for 5 minutes. I'm telling you, Don, for five whole minutes at least, Wardell held that crowd by himself on stage, and he was soloing, and that boy was all over them drums, man. I was waiting for a drum to bust. He was hitting them hard. He was doing man, you knew you were. That's why you laughing, Wardell, because you knew you was showing out. And I said, let's go, Wardell. And after he finished his solo, he did one last final flam on the stage. He'd like to end it to say, and that's what I have to say, ladies and gentlemen. Bam! He got up and he left the station, and then I ran back stage and I said, Wardell, I said, boy, you was cutting up. I said, I didn't know you could play, that you could play like that, because he never had the opportunity to just open up like that with Dynasty. We were so structured, and we did everything, you know, the cues as follows. We didn't do anything that we didn't do in rehearsal with Dynasty. That's what I have to say about Dynasty. We never did anything stretching it out or nothing like that. And that's the first time I saw him stretch out when he was left on stage by himself, and he opened up and he socked it to everybody. I mean, he socked it to him.
Well, it was just, thank you, Kevin, is what I got to say first. Thank you for that. But I was just in shock because Dynasty, we always, it was, you know, we would go through our whole show and we'd get and so when that happened, they just walked off the stage. I just felt that we were letting the audience down, and I just wanted to give them something to be happy about. It was Halloween. It was, and so we were all out celebrating, people all dressed up. We were just all out having a good time. And so, so I just instinctively did that. It wasn't planned. That's for sure. I was in shock.
No, because like, you didn't know they were going to do it.
Yeah,
nobody
didn't
even see it coming. I didn't even see that coming.
Yeah,
let me ask a weird question because you guys just talked about the live performances and things like that and how that freedom you were able to, you know, to kind of just contort yourself into, you know, playing the drums and being into that drum. But I guess my question is, as far as like live performances versus like being on Soul Train when you have to kind of lip sync your songs or whatever, you're going on Soul Train. How was that a difference in as far as even Wardell? I guess a more of a question to Wardell as far as your movements.
Well, so for me, the blessing is that I played on the records. So when we were on Soul Train, I just played it like I played on the record. So it was very easy, and I would just play softer because it wasn't a live gig. We were lip-syncing.
So weird to me.
Yeah, because he was the only person who was actually playing that. The rest of us, we had the keyboards up there, Ricky Smith and I.
Mm-hmm.
And all we were doing was just, you know, going through the motions of what we played, but Wardell was a person who had to actually hit the cymbals when the cymbals were hit on the record. Wardell had to hit the cymbals in the recordings and the tape recordings of doing the shows. And the other thing about Wardell I'd like to say is Wardell is a lead drummer. I don't know if y'all have ever heard it said like this, but in my opinion, because I was right next to Wardell, you know, the way my keyboard was set up was I was right next to Wardell, and my keyboard would face the front, and then Ricky's keyboard we had a corner. And so I always could hear Wardell, and Wardell is very vocal on stage while he's playing. If we seem like we're lagging or we're slowing down, or if we seemed like we were edging, as if we were trying to speed up, he would just say, "Hey, hey, hey!" And then he would lean back on his drummer throne while he's still playing, and he would be telling us he had a language that he would be speaking to everybody to sit back in the pocket. He said, "Listen to the drums, listen to the drums," and then he started hitting the drums, you know.
I could feel them pulling me.
And so that everybody could see, this is what I'm about to hit the snare. And, you know, and so if you didn't hear it in the monitors the way that you might need to, you could look at Wardell and see he's just not hitting the snare. That's where we're supposed to be when he hits that snare. Doom, pop. You know, we're supposed to be sitting back in that pocket that he talked about last time. That pocket, it's a place that you sit in. You sit in the pocket. You don't go ahead of it. You don't go behind. You don't fall behind you. You sit right. It's like sitting in a seat perfectly. You sit back in the pocket and you rest there. You get comfortable. And when you're in the pocket, you comfortably sit right in that pocket and just listen to what Wardell's doing. And he did not allow. I call him a lead drummer because he would get our attention on stage. We're up there playing something, like if it was Groove Control or something like that. Whatever we were playing, Wardell would say, "Hey, hey, hey, hey." And then he uses his head to like, look at me. Look, I'm just not hitting the snare. Don't go ahead of me. Stay right here. And he'd lean back and say, "Sit back in the pocket," is what that meant to me. Then I would pay attention to Wardell. I'm right next to him. I can't ignore him. Wasn't trying to ignore him. I knew that, I need to sit back and relax and not edge the keyboard part. Just stay right with Wardell. And he did that to Leon, too. He did it to Leon, too. Leon would be playing the bass, and Wardell would say, "Hey, hey." And then Leon would end up turning around, you know, briefly, and making sure that he was with Wardell. Wardell was a lead drummer, in my opinion.
Thank you. Well, guys, we only have a few minutes.
You kept us on point.
We have. Thank you, Kevin. And I loved it. I love listening to you tell stories. You have the best stories.
Love it, man. Yeah.
But he was the backbone. I have him on my show.
I was taught that. Yeah, I was taught that.
And he was down and about it. He was the backbone of that group. When people listen to Dynasty Would Take the Stage, and we're playing, they said we sounded more like a record than anybody else on that tour.
Yeah, that's right.
That was and there you go. Right there.
There it is. That's Kevin's song, guys. We love you. Thank you, guys. Thanks, Kevin. Thanks, Don. And thanks for the listening.
Thank you, Wardell.
All right. Love you guys. Thanks, Greg, for the amazing work. We love you guys all. Have a blessed and wonderful Solar Weekend.
And
we'll see you guys.
This is what I'm talking about, Wardell. Wardell, if you listen on this track, how you double up on the kids.
All right.
That was smooth.
Let's listen to you soon, Kevin. Here we go. Come on.
All right.